Hello and welcome back. Once again, this is Reporter's File, and once again, four reports from four different countries.
Sacrifice and resistance, the lessons of Ashura. The casualties of another American war in Pakistan.Remnants of the first human civilization in Iran. And chemical weapons, another threat to humanity.
Shia Muslims around the world commemorate the day of Ashura each year. On that fateful day, the Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein,A number of his family members and his companions were brutally slain. But more than a millennium later, their message continues to reverberate across the world. Press TV's Amin Alami takes a look at what Afghans have learned from the day of Ashura.
13 centuries and 72 years from now, Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and grandson of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, launched a revolution against arrogance, injustice and tyranny in Karbala of Iraq. According to Islamic history, the uprising resulted in a standoff in the way of the anti-Islamic policies of the rulers at the time government and the appearance of a culture of Islamic awakening. That is why Muslims around the world look to this event as a holy event.
According to Islamic researchers, Islam is a comprehensive and perfect religion that can undoubtedly lead everybody to truth, freedom, and struggling against arrogance. It also offers mankind the best ways to live his life with peace, friendship, and brotherhood. And now, Imam Hussein's revolution against tyranny and despotism, a revolution known as the Ashura Epic, is a clear example of such leadership by the holy religion of Islam.
As there were no rule of Islamic law and even the Islamic values were under a huge anti-Islamic attacks, Imam Hussein launched his anti-arrogance revolution in the light of pure Islamic values to save Islam and its values.
As there are many options for Muslims to gather in a place to show their unity, Ashura, or the commemoration ceremony of Imam Hussein's revolution against arrogance, is one such option.In the Ashura commemoration ceremony, Afghans gather in mosques, universities and public places like here each year to talk about the message of Ashura and about their responsibilities as the followers of Imam Hussein and of Islam.
Our gathering during the month of Muharram and Ashura Day helps us to be united more than ever. On the other hand, it helps Muslims to establish a unique policy to make a better world for all humanity.
Besides such gatherings, Afghans have their own traditions. Along with adorning the streets and mosques with flags, they wear black or green clothes during the 10 days of Muharram, the first month in the Islamic calendar, to show to mourn. They also offer food and tea to the mourners and the poor.
During the first 10 days of Muharram, there are many traditional programs which can have a positive impact on personalities of our kids and youth. Such ceremonies also help them to understand the message of Imam Hussein, that is the founding of anti-arrogance culture.
According to the Holy Quran, Islam is a religion of humanity, not only Arabs or any other ethnic group. So, opportunities for providing a proper understanding of the contents of the movement of Ashura as a very important part of Islamic culture should be prepared by all of those who really want to find the truth.
Based on Islamic beliefs, Ashura is a holy ancient observance, and it has a lot to say about humanity around the world.But it is not just the Muslim world that pays attention to Imam Hussein's movement. Many non-Muslim scholars, scientists and politicians have emphasized on celebrating and following Imam Hussein's legacy.
Though the Ashura commemoration ceremony took place in a calm atmosphere so far in Afghanistan, this Ashura has seen bloodshed. Terrorist attacks against hundreds of Afghan mourners have killed about 70 people and injured 100 more. The capital Kabul, Mazar-e-Sharif in northern Afghanistan and Kandahar in south were the scene of such attacks on the day.
A terrorist attacked the mourners during Ashura commemoration ceremony here in Kabul, which resulted to killing and injuring of dozens of our Muslim people.
But what would be the motive for such an attack, and who is really behind such acts against the unity of Muslims? This man offers some answers.
The main reason behind such terrorist attacks is being of an ideal Islamic brotherhood and unity among different ethnic groups in Afghanistan. And this is what our enemies do not like to see it among the Afghan society.
Ashura is the embodiment of the highest of sublime human and social values and ideals, which have always summoned the people to the understanding of those values and ideals and to commit themselves to them and to live in accordance with them. The content of the Ashura's movement is an objective manifestation of a guiding model for the revival of religion at the level of thought, spirit and life, as well as for a human education, man-making and the ordering and reconstruction of society. Amin Alemi, Press TV, Kabul.
The so-called war on terror in Pakistan has deprived thousands of children of their basic right to education. They have been forced to leave their homes and live in tough conditions in tents. Press TV's Zayed Hossein takes us inside the life of Pakistan's IDPs.
It is true that majority of families in Pakistan finds it increasingly difficult to afford education expenses of their children. However, families displaced at the hands of military operations in the country's northwest are a totally different case. This case is directly linked with the ongoing security situation in the country. Since August 2008, military offensives against pro-Taliban militants in Pakistan's tribal areas have forced thousands of families to leave their homes and take shelter in tent camps in other parts of the country. This has led to multiple human rights violations, including children's right to education.
Each military offensive has social effects and repercussions. So we have seen human rights violation in case of border operation, especially in children case. Many misfortune were brought on them as their school were destroyed either by pro-Taliban militants or came under attack during the offensive, which left thousands of children deprived of their basic right of education.
There are thousands of children in the IDP camps who were earlier in schools in their tribal areas, but have now ended up doing child labor due to their families' economic hardships caused by the displacement, or their families struggle to keep them in schools in a place where they now live as IDPs. Fatherless Abdurrahman was in fifth grade when his family fled their home soon after war broke out between government troops and pro-Taliban militants in Khyber Tribal Agency. While he was yet to rejoin the school in camps, his elder brother, the only breadwinner of the family, was killed in a shootout between troops and militants, thus making it enormously difficult for him to continue his education.
After being displaced from our home, we were brought to this camp. My mother had to work hard for my schooling and two square meals for all of us. We tried hard to live with whatever little we had, but we could not manage. So I had to quit my schooling and work hard to provide food for the family.
Abdurrahman has five sisters and two younger brothers. Her mother, an illiterate housewife, says she now doesn't know how to keep her children in school without any source of income. And that's out of sheer compulsion that she sends her son Abdurrahman to work rather than to school. All she thinks to blame is the war, the fight between the military and pro-Taliban militants, which continues to haunt her village and keeps her children displaced. The family needs a sustainable source of income for subsistence in the displacement. Rehmat Sher, An old displaced student had to quit school when he was left with the only option to support his family that had been forced to flee their home and find shelter and food by themselves in the IDP camp. His father had died, leaving him to look after his mother and two sisters.
I had to quit my schooling when I was in fifth grade. My father died and we were displaced. So I had to feed my sisters and my mother. Since then, I'm working hard as a laborer just to earn livelihood for them. I also have a strong desire to get educated and find a respectable job.
There are countless stories of IDP families who need immediate financial support to help their children continue their education. For years, they have asked the authorities for monthly stipends in order to just keep their children in educational institutions. But support from the government is nowhere to be seen. With thousands of children deprived of education and still many more missing classes, they continue to live as IDPs. Analysts see far-reaching effects on the future of country's next generation.
As education holds a key position in advancement and prosperity of any country, and if education is destroyed, so it means that that country will never progress. As a long portion of our next generation is deprived of education, so it means it will have a long-lasting effects on the prosperity of our country.
Education has never been the right of any children who hail from tribal areas and who now live as IDPs. Say almost all those families frustrated by the sufferings of conflict-induced displacement and the government's failure to address their plight. Zahid Hussain, Press TV, Peshawar.
Iran's National Museum has unveiled a group of historical relics that date back some 5 millennia. They were brought back home after a row with a British museum that was planning to auction them off. Amir Mehdi Kazemi has more details.
Celebrating the return of 5,000-year-old ancient relics back home. In an official ceremony held in Iran's National Museum, President Ahmadinejad and cultural heritage officials unveiled some 18 historical artifacts which had recently been taken back from a gallery in Britain. The items belong to the Halian Rud or the Giruf civilization. They consist of 2 jars, 5 cups, 6 vases, 1 bowl, 1 dish, and 3 weights from the early Bronze Age. Giroft culture is the latest civilization discovered in the world. It forms one of the most mysterious chapters of human history in southern Iran. During the ceremony, Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad expressed hope that Iran would be able to reclaim similar items which are illegally kept abroad.
These items are very important to us. Now they are in Iran, but something important also happened along the way. It is for the first time that we have managed to return our ancient relics through legal action. This opens a new door for the return of other historical items.
Iran's cultural heritage organization says that the ancient artifacts were smuggled out from a historical site known as Konar Sandal, near the current city of Giroft, between 2001 and 2004. The relics were later found in the Barakat Gallery in London, which planned to auction them. But after winning the legal battle by Iran, they were sent back home. However, according to a number of sources, the Barakat Gallery still possesses a number of these precious items.
Mysterious creatures can be seen in the art of Giroft, the snake, the scorpion, the hawk, and the ram. These elements symbolize power, well-being, and greatness. In the civilizations which are formed in the Iranian plateau after Giroft, we see these symbols again, but in a more meaningful way. We have found objects that seem to be inspired by the culture of Halil River, even in areas such as the northeast of Iran, which is far away from Giroft.
The objects are in good condition. They are decorated with highly distinctive engravings of animals, mythological figures, and architectural motifs, revealing many aspects of the Persian civilization and other cultures that flourished in Mesopotamia in the 3rd and 4th millennia BC. Experts in the National Museum of Iran say that these relics will help further complete a part of the puzzle which already exists about the Jirovt culture.
We already have a variety of objects from Jirovt in our treasury. These artifacts belong to the people of Iran. The more samples we have, the more we will be able to study the Jirovt civilization more thoroughly and introduce our ancient heritage to the world.
Many archaeologists regard Jirovt as the first cradle of human civilization. Historical remains and tablets show a civilization at least 300 years older than that of Mesopotamia and the Indus River. The theory has already sparked controversy among the archaeologists. Some believe that considering Jirovt as the center of human civilization would require serious reconsideration in the pages of history books.
The art of Jirovt is unique. By looking at Mesopotamian artifacts, we come to many questions and ambiguities. But this art is outstanding. It pursues a special school of art which shows the artists followed specific rules and principles in creating their works.
This is not the first time that Iran takes legal action for the return of its historical items back home. With the arrival of the latest ancient artifacts, new hopes have emerged for the return of other items which are currently held in countries such as Britain and the United States. Iran has a similar case in the U.S. for a collection of Achaemenid cuneiform tablets held by the government after a district court in Washington ordered the seizure of the items in 2003. They were initially loaned to the Oriental Institute of the University of Chicago and the Field Museum of Chicago by Iran for restoration and translation in 1977. The historical items were supposed to remain in the U.S. until 1980. But after Iran's Islamic Revolution, they were kept in the U.S. under the pretext of further research. The 3,000-piece collection was discovered in a chamber at the basement of Persepolis. Archaeologists say that the clay tablets and fragments contain administrative records of the Persian Empire, such as payments to workers who built the Persepolis and women employees receiving special bonuses after childbirth. In 2003, some 300 tablets were returned to Iran only before the U.S. court ruling to seize the rest of the national heritage. In 2010, the Islamic Republic managed to win the battle in a U.S. federal appeals court, but it is awaiting the tablets' return, and the University of Chicago has still remained reluctant to send them back to Iran.
Returning these items back to the country is important, not just because they belong to the people of Iran and are part of the cultural heritage of this country, but also because of the need for scientific research by archaeologists and those who are involved in the field of history.
Similar cases still exist, where Iranian historical heritage has been looted and later discovered in museums and private collections outside the country. Experts say that the return of the Jirovt artifacts have paved the way for legal experts in Iran to retrieve other relics back to where it belongs. Amir Mehdi Kazemi, Press TV, Tehran.
World nations agreed to dismantle their chemical weapons in 1997. Yet 15 years on, two countries, Russia and the United States, maintain stockpiles thousands of tons in volume each. Hassan Ghani reports on the horrors that those weapons have caused in the past, the impact of which is being felt this very day.
March 2003, the United States and the UK bomb Baghdad and invade Iraq. The pretext, the regime of Saddam Hussein possesses weapons of mass destruction. Those weapons were never found, and the dossier presented by Western governments upon which the war was launched was later discredited. And today, despite its previous proclamations on the dangers of weapons of mass destruction, the United States remains in possession of one of the largest stockpiles of chemical weapons in the world.
China is deeply worried about the probable failure of certain states to meet the final extended deadline for destroying their chemical stockpiles and its grave negative impact. It's important that state parties strictly abide by the provisions of the Chemical Weapons Convention.
In 1997, signatories to the Chemical Weapons Convention were given a decade to eliminate their stockpiles. In 2007, some nations, including the US, asked for an extension. The final non-extendable deadline was set to April 2012.
Now, as that deadline approaches, America has warned that it won't meet it and needs another decade to destroy all of its chemical weapons.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and independent wills and international public opinion have important and serious questions in this connection. We are profoundly doubtful of the political will of the U.S. administration. The U.S. decision on non-destruction of stockpiles of chemical weapons will be a source of serious concern for peoples across the globe.
The U.S. says it remains committed to destroying its chemical weapons, but it says the process is complicated and expensive and will take time. But some member states of the Chemical Weapons Convention say the U.S. is in breach of its obligations and should be penalized in the interests of fairness.
The convention is very clear that if this deadline is not met, the obligation of complete destruction remains valid. So it shall be discussed to set some set of actions against the possessor states to compel them to observe their obligations for the complete destruction.
The bitter irony of the Iraq war was that Saddam Hussein did indeed possess and use weapons of mass destruction, but two decades earlier, during the Iran-Iraq war. At that time, he was supported and armed by the US and Europe. 188 nations are members of the Convention on Chemical Weapons, but it comes as no surprise that Iran, a nation which has itself been the victim of chemical weapons attacks on a huge scale, is at the forefront of the campaign to rid the world of weapons of mass destruction. As member states look to the approaching deadline at the 16th annual meeting of the Chemical Weapons Convention, outside stood a reminder of the past. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons acknowledges the price paid by Iranians in this dark chapter of modern history.
I share their sorrow and the sorrow of their families, and I want to take this opportunity to express my homage to the victims who died during the chemical weapons attacks in 1987 and during the war, and also my homage to their families.
Hundreds of chemical bombs were dropped on Iran during the war. The aftermath still impacts the lives of ordinary Iranians, like Hassan Fatahi, who was 27 at the time. He's been left disabled and still suffers from breathing problems.
I saw this, all these images, with my own eyes. The burns, the blisters, the coughing up of blood, I saw it all. The way things were, everyone was dying. My worst memory was trying to get my 8-year-old nephew Ismail to hospital. He died in my arms. My brother died too. Then I got sick.
In this context, it's not hard to see why Iran is seriously concerned about the continued existence of chemical weapons stockpiles. In the end, most member states voted not to penalize the US and Russia for failing to meet the deadline. Instead, they will have to provide detailed plans for the destruction of their remaining stockpiles, which should take place in the shortest time possible. But there are still some who haven't even ratified the treaty. Among them, Israel, which possesses stockpiles of chemical, nuclear, and possibly biological weapons. And unlike the Chemical Weapons Convention, the Biological Weapons Convention has no monitoring instruments in place, so there's little that can be done to enforce it. That's in part due to obstruction from the United States. Today, weapons of mass destruction continue to pose a very real threat to mankind, and the fight to eliminate them from the world continues. Hassan Ghani, Press TV, The Hague.
And that's your reporter's file for this week. Many thanks for watching. I hope to see you again on the next program right here on Press TV.